Well, you got a lot pulling at you, too. Say something so I can make sure it's picking up.
Not half bad. I drank some vodka with some guy, you know.
Oh, my goodness. I wonder if you're better.
Wasn't frog fairies in there.
What is today, the 15th?
You ever hear of frog fairies?
No, I have no idea what all that is, no. I don't drink.
He was my old standby. He worked for me for over 25 years on my place out there.
My goodness.
I got blueberries out there I need to go out there and pick.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe half of them fell off.
Let's see, today.
You want to turn that light off?
Is it bothering you?
No.
I kind of need it, but if it's bothering your eyes, I'll turn it off.
Damn, I thought it might give some heat. I would have brought a fan in here.
Do you want Henry to get it?
I just got one window up.
Today's June the 15th, 1991, and I'm in the home of James Hines, and Henry DeHart is also present.
Well, you do have a farm?
Me, yes.
How do you operate that thing?
Oh, I have men working for me that are good, and I tell them what to do, and
What?
I have a bunch of men that work for me.
Yeah.
And I have good men, so all I have to do is give them a sense
of. Do they live there on the place?
Mm-hmm. Some of them do.
Yeah.
I work good people. That gives me freedom.
Well, you're lucky to have somebody.
I don't work them if they're not good.
Is it a producing place?
Mm-hmm. We have tobacco and corn and soybeans.
Did you buy it yourself, or is that where you're originally from?
No, I inherited it all.
You inherited it? The
it's
farm.
It's been in our family over 100 years.
How long?
Over 100 years.
Yeah, some of this property out through there been in my family for 100 years.
We had coal mines, too, so we've been around a while.
Coal mines?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you then, where were you born, James?
Where was I born?
Yes.
I was born 1 mile north of Roseanne, Kentucky.
What year?
1932.
What's your birth date?
June the 22nd.
And what was your mother's maiden name?
I said 32, huh? Was Stogner, Jesse Stogner.
S-T-A-G-N-E-R?
S-T-O-G-N-E-R.
O-G, okay. What was her first name?
Your
mother's first name?
Jesse.
What was your dad's name?
Was John.
Was he from...
Johnny.
Johnny. Was he from Roseanne?
Yeah.
Both of them were?
1 mile north of Roseanne. The Hines family was settled Dundee, you know.
They did.
1840 or something. I got the old history on it.
Hmm.
You'd look it up in college. Collins history, I believe, or something like that.
Anyway,
got biographical sketches.
Mm-hmm. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have one brother and two sisters.
What's your brother's name?
Homer.
Where does he live?
Where does he live?
Yes.
Louisville, Kentucky.
And what about your sisters?
One sister lived out there would be Roseanne, Kentucky. Lived out there on my grandfather's farm.
What's her name?
You ever go out that road?
Out
1544.
No, I haven't been out that road.
And other sister lived in Grayson County. Her address might be Spring Lake or something.
Okay, what's her name?
Barbara. And my sister lives out there is named Gertrude.
All right, do you go to church anywhere?
Huh?
Do you have a religious preference?
Do I have what?
A religious preference.
Baptist.
You were raised Baptist?
Yeah. Baptist and Democrat.
Baptist and Democrat. How much, well, let's see, then you went to school here?
Pardon?
You went to grade school in Roseanne?
Yeah, I went to grade school in Roseanne.
Then where did you go to high school?
Horse Branch.
And where did you go to college?
University of Kentucky.
What was your major?
Journalism.
What year did you graduate?
I didn't graduate.
Oh.
I like a little having my degree.
Okay.
I went the Army around and...
Were you in the war? Oh, you were too young to be in the war.
No, I wasn't in a war, just in the Army.
Just in the Army. What did you do in the Army?
I don't know what you call it now. I was ahead of a detachment area where barracks where people came in that was sick and everything. And I was ahead of that thing.
Hmm.
I don't know what you call it now.
Hmm.
It's a ordnance. Some sort of form of ordinance, I think. It was probably a desk clerk in a military hospital. That's probably what it was. People come in there for rest ups and was sick and everything, and it was a barracks type place, you know. Mm-hmm. Had all kinds in there, and I had an office up there and phone.
How long were you in the Army?
I was in 2.5 years.
Did you go overseas?
No.
Always in America?
In the United States.
All right. Well, let's go back to your childhood. When you were little, what did you do? Where did you play, and how did you spend your time as a child?
Well, I spent it in the woods and fields and creeks and out traveling around more nature. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of reading and writing too.
Even as a young child?
Yeah. I intended to be a writer when I was about 12 years old.
How did you decide to become a writer?
I don't know. I just decided I wanted to be a writer. I was about 12 years old and going over here at Rosine Grade School. Mm-hmm. And I wrote 2 or 3 stories, things they got up. Teacher went high school, the teacher made me get up and swear it was mine. That was embarrassing. I would never done something like that.
Why is that?
That it was original, swear I wrote it.
Mm-hmm. You were embarrassed?
Yeah, it was embarrassing. Then I'd write it all the time when I was 19, 20 year old up there at University of Kentucky in the journalism department. They said I was an example. I was writing and selling stories, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you were a child, did your father farm for a living?
My father farmed. My grandfather and them had a big farm out there.
Did you ever do labor on the farm?
Yeah, I did it all the time. All was done by horses and mules, you know.
Yeah, so you worked and wrote.
Yeah, I worked and wrote and went swimming, ran around in the woods. I wrote a lot of wildlife stories.
Did you?
These kids now, they don't know one tree from another. Mm-hmm. You're taking all that down on tape, aren't you? Yeah.
Right here. You can have a copy of it if you want.
I've written it up in my stories, you know, things like that.
So a lot of themes from your writing have come from your childhood here?
Yeah. Going back, things I learned in the woods, in the fields, possum hunting at night, and most of the older people knew the history of their country and their families and everything. Young people don't know any of that no more.
That's true.
And I had old people lived up to be 90, they would tell me the whole history back when, like Bill Pierce run a store here in Rosine for maybe 30 years, and he grew up out in my country and lived on a farm. Grew up on a farm next to my father's down in the old Hartford Literature Road. He could remember when they was coming through and covered wagons going west. And they had shutters. They didn't have glass. They had shutters, had a big log house. And so a lot of those people had a big well there. It was dug for a thrasher, wheat thrashers, you know, steam engines required water.
Yes.
Boilers, and they'd camp around that well, and sometimes their parents would let them come down and spread their blankets down in that living room and sleep that night. Mm-hmm. Now people wouldn't do that, take a stranger in like that. And mm-hmm.
So would you say that this man was a big influence in your life?
Yeah, and my grandfather was too, because they were natural born storytellers. They knew the history.
What was your, are you talking about your father's father or your mother's father?
Well, both of them, but especially my grandfather, Hines.
What kind of things did he tell you?
What kind of things did what?
What kind of stories was he telling you?
Oh, he tells, you know, about shooting and killing and, when they sit down and talk, they talk about people, you know, just long gone people that, as if they're here, you know, they talk about the people that have lived back and they.
So you grew up with all of this, all these stories these people were telling you about this area and settling here.
I used to hear somebody tell one, and I'd run home and take down as much as I could on my typewriter.
Yes.
And then later on, I could use it as material, you know, weave it into a story.
Mm-hmm.
I used to write one short story a day in rough draft, and then work on a book.
How long would it take you to put out a short story? How many type pages were they usually?
You know, since I was trying to do high caliber work, I'd work on that thing a week. Say a 4,000 word story, I'd work on that thing one solid week.
Did you write at night mainly in your young days?
I wrote at night and I wrote of a day too. I lived about 1 acre of ground way off the road down on a creek there, came off my grandfather's farm, and I built a 10-room block house. And I lived in that block house 5 years writing. People said I lived like a monk in a cell, and some people thought I was off.
Well, that was before you married?
Yeah,
and I wrote
day and I wrote night. And I didn't have a television or I didn't have a radio or nothing. And I wrote and I read, and then late of the afternoon I got around and walked around neighbors. Everybody was friendly then, you know.
Yes.
Very friendly, and they dropped in a talk, and no television and things like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not very many of them, and a lot of them didn't even have electricity, you know. 1951 is when electricity came through that region, and my brother went west with them to run the power lines in Wyoming and Montana and all through there. You know, when I grew up, wasn't no electricity out there. Well, Henry knows that. I don't guess what's here out in that country.
Well, when you were writing these stories at that time then, do you get real involved to the point you don't do anything else?
Yeah.
Even then?
You could get lost. You could get to living those characters, and it's you know.
That was my next question. Do you live the story?
Yeah, I would get interested in it, and I would live it, you know. Marriage has ruined a great portion of my life.
It has?
Yeah. Ruined a great portion.
Do you have any children?
Not living.
I have
a stepdaughter, and my first wife was an RN, and we divorced. She's up here to see me last summer and spent 2 weeks. She's a supervisor. I'm in a hospital in Sebastian, Florida, and lived at Palm Bay, and she regretted the divorce, talked about it all the time, regretting it, and wanted to remarry, and me live down in Palm Bay.
Would you consider moving out of this area?
Yeah.
Seems like you've always come back.
Well, I came back here and because I married, and I was living in Owensboro, you know. And this girl was an operating room technician, but she was poet, you know. She wrote this old portrait to a magazine. Henry knew her, didn't you? That little short fat.
What was her name?
Patricia Pat.
Now, is this the woman who's now in Florida?
No, her name was Iris.
Iris?
Yeah. So she worked at Owensboro just a few months. She had an awful wreck.
Mm.
Yeah. She wasn't able to do nothing for 2 years. She's all total disability now. She's 43-year-old. And they gave her so many drugs and everything all the time, she went clean off, you know. And it going by me, and when I went down there to Spank's drugstore, they told me she had taken enough drugs by half Ohio County.
Goodness.
She left, went up to her mother, then she went to Bell Park Hospital in Houston, Texas. That's probably no interested in...
No, I'm interested in your life now. We're doing on your life right now.
And they put her in a psychiatric ward for 60 days, detoxifying her dependence on medicine, what she said, but her mind alters, you know.
Yeah.
Her whole relationship with me went opposite from what it was.
But you all had in common writing, is what I'm getting
from
this,
Yeah, we
right?
had a good marriage when she was disabled. She liked to read my stories, and she was learning how to correct them, you know, be objective to my writing and help me on them. I wouldn't have bought this place. I got out, see, and I wouldn't have bought the place it's too much work for me to do, and it interferes with my writing, you know, all this stuff to take care of.
Well, then, other than you being in the service, have you ever done anything but write? Have you made your living by writing this whole time?
Well, I made much of my living, but I worked on all sorts of jobs across the United States. So many of them, I worked as a bellman in Hollywood and Los Angeles area and Florida area, a whole lot.
Were you writing in those days?
Yeah, I was writing all the time, and I worked in the steel mills a long time, and I worked as a guard and private detective and things for Pinkerton, and that Indiana Army ammunition plant, and LaSalle Steel in Chicago, and I worked as a welder, electric welder, bolt and nut machine operator, radio announcer on a Heart's Desire program in Hollywood, all sorts of things.
Why did you travel so much?
How did I travel?
Why did you travel so much?
Well, I'd get in some place to write and, you know, some job that didn't tax me, you know. You don't want a writing job if you're writing fiction and stuff. I had jobs like bellman and things. I'd pick up a lot of information, and it didn't tax you mentally, you know. Then you had a nice time.
In other words, you were making enough to live on,
yeah,
and have time to write.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I was real young, you know, mm-hmm. Sometimes 21, 22. Or.
So when did you leave this community and go out into the world?
When I was 16. When I left the first time I was 16, I went to Evansville, Indiana. And I got a job as a bolt and nut machine operator. Bolt and nut machine operator. Just, I don't know, a Faultless Casters Corporation, some kind of machine operator putting them nuts on those casters, you know, bed casters.
Why did you leave Rosine area?
Then?
Yes.
Well, you know, there were good jobs over there and everything, mm-hmm. So. Then I came back and I finished my last year of high school, and then I went back. Worked as an electric welder, and I went in the Army. From the Army, I taught school one term, and then I went to University of Kentucky.
Where did you teach school?
It was at Washington. It's below Hartford. It was a rural school that has been done away with.
Was it a one or two-room school?
One room, and I had 40 pupils. I taught all grades.
How did you like teaching?
Well, I had students as old as I was, you know. Almost. The teacher before, they played fox and hound. He was a fox. They run him up a tree, and every time he tried to come down, they'd rock him. And at night, they'd come out looking for him. He's still up that tree, you know. They had him up that tree. But they never, you know, a lot of them liked me. They would aim to gang me that way, but they couldn't get up enough to do it.
Do you think that's because you were from a similar area than they raised up? Or
well,
was this
they liked me. Some of them liked me, and some of them as big as I was, you know. They liked me, and they couldn't get up enough to do it. That's what one of them told me later. A bunch of them tried to do it and do me the same way they done that other teacher. I guess I was lucky.
Well, when you went out on your first job to Evansville, could you tell that you were from a more rural area than Evansville? Did you fit in there? Or?
Yeah, I did. I stayed with the family from this area. You know, I roomed with them or boarded with them. And I worked there 4 months, I guess, and I went back and finished my last year of high school. And I did Army, then I taught school, then I went to University of Kentucky, and I left University of Kentucky and went to Chicago. And went back to University of Kentucky. I had, although I left, went to California and stayed in California a while, out Pacific Palisades. Lived out there one whole summer and wrote.
How did you like California?
Well, I did. I've been out there several times, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And 1988, my wife and I went out there. Went to San Monica where I'd lived. My first wife was a nurse. After she passed the state board, we went out there and lived. And she worked at, we lived in Santa Monica near the ocean, and she worked at Wadsworth Hospital, which was a large, worked at Saltella. That's the largest military home and hospital in the world.
Well, James, after you've traveled all over the world in all these places, or all over the United States, is it hard to be in Rosine?
Hard to live in Rosine?
Yes.
No, I loved it. I built a place when I left Chicago. I lived out there. Henry knows where my place. He helped me pour a concrete bridge out there. Did he tell you about that?
No, but I knew he'd done some.
And I had a home out there and built out of creek stone and native wood paneling, hand-finished doors made out of black walnut. Living room, 38-foot living room out of black walnut. And I lived out there in one room for years. I'd live there nine months. Then I'd go to Louisville to work at Fountain Ferry Park, run a slum joint. They call it in a carnival, fish pond. You ever see one of them?
No. What is it?
When I left there, when I came back from Chicago, I stayed there a year and built that place. I worked at Riding. And I left and went to Mammoth, Florida, and stayed there the winter. And I came back to Louisville and run that slum joint and come back here. And for 5 or 6 years, I lived out there 9 months a year and went to Louisville and worked that, run that slum joint for that guy.
But you all, what is it you like about Rosine? Tell me.
Well, now, since I'm single, I don't like anything about it. Rosine had changed, you know, and people I love dearly, they have gone, like my grandparents, different people.
I mean, they've died.
They have died, or some of them have moved away. I really don't like it here anymore, but I got this home here, and it'd be hard to sell because economy is bad, Ohio County, you know.
Yes. Well, when you liked being here, what were the things that made you like it?
Well, out there, I felt I had a purpose to... I was dedicated in writing a story of that country out there, you know. And I liked it, and I'd like to live out there. But now, since I'm older, I don't like way back in the country no more. It's a much more work to do. And if I was back 25, 6 years old when I first built out there, I'd like it.
Yes.
But now, since I'm older, I need to be working at my writing. When you go to the graveyard, it don't have how many yards you have mowed, but if you leave a piece of riding, you might have left something. But all this yard work and stuff takes up so much time, it ain't going to say on your tombstone you mowed a yard 400 times. That's one thing about Bill Monroe. He was able to stick to it. He stuck to music straight through.
Well, what old-time musicians do you remember? Who was playing around when you were a little boy? Who were some of the old-time musicians that were playing in the community when you were a little boy?
Well, William Pierce. William Pierce was a fiddler, and his son, Marn, was a guitar player. You know, I got a picture of him fiddling guitar, but mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you who it is.
Oh, I wish we could find it. Wouldn't that
yeah,
be good?
Yeah, he's got old Hanna-Barbera mustache. And
on the documentary, we're trying to put together old-time musicians, and we could put him in there. That would be great.
If you count me and I get some publicity out of it, I got all this stuff floating around.
If you let us take a picture of it, we'd give you the credit for it, of course.
Yeah.
So William Pierce was a fiddler?
William Pierce.
And what did you say was his...
His son, Marn, played a guitar. Back in
Marlon,
Myron, yeah.
Myron. Oh, Myron. Okay. His son Myron played what guitar?
Myron just died here. You knew him real well. Did you know William?
No, I didn't.
The old man played the fiddle.
Is this the man you were talking about earlier? The same Pierce that had meant a lot to you?
William Pierce and his son Myron.
The one that had told you all the stories? Is this the same
No, he
man?
Didn't tell me so many. He wasn't a good storyteller,
oh,
but
okay.
Bill Pierce. Bill Pierce was a storekeeper. Another one told
That's
me
okay.
so many.
That's okay. I'm getting them mixed up. Okay.
Yeah.
Bill Pierce was a storekeeper.
Yeah.
And he's the one who told you the
stories. Yeah, all
stories.
These old-timers, they talked about the past and they talked about the family, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Pierce knew the history of his family when they came over from England. Two of them died, had the water... Barrels, and they settled down below where Halls Creek there, and they hid some money during the Civil War. And my grandfather told me about when Quantrell and the Raiders came through here and stopping at grandfather's right and Frank James, well, did Dundee and kill a man at Slate's Riffle, and they knew the history of the country. You know how they was, Henry. You'd sit around these stores, and all these people, old country stores, come in on a rainy day, be 8 or 10 of them. They'd sit around and talk. That's all they talked about. Now, there was Melvin Kaysinger was a fiddler, old-time fiddler. And there was Tater Bill Allen.
What did he play?
He played a fiddle. I'm talking about the fiddler.
These are all fiddlers. Was Kaysinger a fiddler,
too? Yeah. No, Noah Stewart said Melvin was a playing. Melvin carried his fiddle with him all the time.
He did?
Yeah. Play any place, any time, sit down and fiddle for you. His wife taught school. Noble said when he was a kid, about 7 or 8 year old, and Melvin was playing up there, and they greased his fiddle bowl with axle grease. He started playing squeak, squeak, squeak. Noble said his uncle get drunk and play with the bow underneath the fiddle, clean bathes, and he said that's the reason he didn't drink. Play the fiddle bow upside down, you know. One of them played breakdown, the other one played waltzes.
Do you remember Cletus?
Huh?
Do you remember Cletus? Cletus Bays?
Yeah, I remember Cletus Bays. I remember, he was sick. The only time I remember anything much about Cletus Bays, he sat around Red Rooster's store over there. That was in the 50s. And asked Noble about that, and Noble said he had cancer. He died of cancer. Clay Bay was sick at that time. I remember he asked me where was I living. I had been in Chicago and talking to him. That Melvin came along where we was my dad and grandfather and them was planting corn, and my brother and I was chopping it out, and he had that fiddle with him, and they told him, play a tune, and he sat down and went to playing, and finally, we had to go off leaving. He sat there playing himself, you know. That's all they live for, you know. And that Uncle Penn, he was a trader. He started out from Buck Monroe's house. That's Bill's father, you know. You wouldn't see him for a week. Maybe he'd start out with a pocket knife. He always had to have that boot. And in a week he'd come back maybe and he'd have leading a cow. He went through the country trading, you know. That's a lot of people did that. Bill told me about that himself. He always had to have that boot trading. So it was the depression times, you know, and everything wasn't many cars in this town in the 30s, you know. That's what Charlie Monroe got cut all the pieces over that car they had, you know.
He did?
Yeah.
What happened?
He had a big scar here. Well, Hope Swift seen it down there. Henry should know something about that because your grandfather wanted to cut him in pieces, wasn't it? Did he tell you about that?
Oh, what is it? Well, tell me.
Huh?
You tell me.
Well, now, Henry's already told you that.
No, I don't remember it, honestly.
Hope Swift seen it. And Hope's dead now. And Charlie and Birch had a car, an old car, and they was running it around the block, and somebody made a smart remark. I don't know what was said. Do you know what was said, Henry?
Harry's one said it.
Huh?
Harry, their brother's one said
it. Yeah, I know it.
Yeah,
but you get rolling wheels again or something, and of course they high tempered, those Monroe's highest tempered people you ever saw. And Charlie and Birch come back around there and stopped, won't know who said it, and went in the barber shop, and Willis Peach was a barber, his grandfather wouldn't tell it, but Harry Monroe was the one said it. Harry Monroe and Andrew Basham, they was big cut up, humorous, you know, natural born humorous. And then Charlie and Willis Peach, now that's what, I don't know how, but Charlie had Willis down and Willis was saying, take him off me, take him off. And he's cutting him pieces. I forget if it was a razor, or it seemed to me like it was a knife with the blade broken out of it.
Barlow
knife with the blade part broken out. What Hope said wouldn't, now you already know that, don't you?
No, I don't, honestly.
What Hobart Swift said, they pulled Charlie off, and his whole shirt was soaked with blood. And Burt Monroe fainted. And, of course, Harry Monroe, that's Bill's brother, told me Dr. Dunn, he sewed him up. His face, Charlie Monroe, had a big scar right along here, and he cut up across here, too. He sewed him up, he's an old doctor, half doctor, you know, and he sewed him up and done a botched job. And Hope said, Otis Peach was working for Jack Monroe, but Jack didn't know anything about it. I mean, Otis didn't know anything about it. He was a boy. Now, Jack Monroe house over used to be a big two-story house with a picket fence around it, you know, fence around it, picket fence, I guess. And he went to work next morning, and Jack Monroe stopped him at the gate and told him not to come inside. They carried Charlie over there, I guess. But he about cut him all to pieces. Charlie Monroe was 6 foot 2 inches tall, you know.
Goodness.
And Willis Peach was a small man, wasn't he? Small.
Sounded like he was small and fast with his hands.
Well, he had him down. He cut him with that knife.
Well, he was about 50 years old. Charlie was 18.
He told him to cut it. He told him to take him off, wasn't he? So, there's all kinds of fights and everything going on here all the time. Roseanne had more murders, and nobody wanted to live here in this place for years, you know.
Why were there so many murders?
I don't know. Five or six, they found them over there on the railroad track. They found Raymond Phelps. He was a good friend of mine. They found Arch Autry. I knew about that. They found Lee Phillips. They found Billy Hatler and Willard Peach. That's about five or six.
Right? No clues as to why they were killed?
Huh?
Why were they killed?
Oh, there was all sorts of stories. I wrote part of the Arch Orchard story up in a fiction story called The Transgressing Woman, you know. They was all out, I guess, drinking that night, and there was a dance going on up here, and some of them said they killed him in the schoolhouse yard, and the guy hit him, didn't mean to kill him. And then another guy said, put him on the railroad track, carry him, put him on the railroad track, let the train run over him, see? Get rid of the evidence, which they did, train run over him. I'm sure Raymond Phelps was killed, don't you believe so? James Lee said he saw Raymond Phelps had one hole like a pair of end of a pair or a spike right up here. Probably Willard Peach and Billy Hatler were killed too. Was Willard Peach related to you?
My uncle.
Huh?
My uncle.
If I can find that picture of William Pierce, you know, he was a... He said Uncle Penn used to ride a red mule, Marn did, and come to her house all the time and stay all night. They would fiddle. Marn and William, one winter, they made over $500 playing for dances. A lot of time they walked 10 miles to play for a dance. They'd only get 25, 50 cents for playing for that dance. They made over $500. You see how many dances they played for.
How did they get from place to place?
You mean they lived out in the country? Usually they walked. It wasn't anything for a person to set out and walk 10 miles. Wasn't when I was a kid either.
Did they ride the railroad any when they were going to these different dances?
No, the dances were just held out here in the country. At that time, most people had the same type house. Now people wouldn't have these dances in and stomping around and tearing up their house, you know. They had oak floors or just bare floors usually, or maybe some kind of throw rugs on them. They take all that back. They had about the same type of house, and they'd put sand in there to scare off the floor, you know, clean it up. They all lived around a community together where they don't do that no more, see. there was no way out except walk or ride a mule or of course a railroad. They could board a train and go someplace, you know. But I'm talking about even before my time, not exactly my time. They all lived around in the community. Then an automobile came in, and these old country stores where people. This town, when I was a kid, be wagging past 10 or 15 in a row. They was coming down to do their trading. Yeah, they'd bring their eggs and cream and stuff and buy their groceries. You can't do that no more. And they bought chickens here. And this town would be full up of people, you know. And have hitching racks all over the place. That's been a short time ago, you know. I've seen a lot to. The folklore and recorded everything. I was dedicated in doing that, you know.
Yes, you've used a lot of it in your writing.
Oh, yeah, several hundred stories.
What else do you know about Uncle Penn?
All I know that some of them said he was a master fiddler, and others said he couldn't play.
What do you really think?
I think he was a good fiddler. I don't know how good, because, you know, you couldn't compare like you can now, all the professional singers. You made your own music, you know. I think he was a good fiddler. He influenced Bill Monroe greatly, you know.
Yes.
That.
Well, did he and this William Pierce, he and William Pierce, did they play together a lot? Consistently over the years?
Or yeah, they did.
Who else would play with him?
Huh?
Did any of these other men you mentioned, did they play with him too?
Yeah, like, they did, but William Pierce played with him a lot. Fact of business, William Pierce owned Uncle Penn's fiddle. And then my uncle, James Vernon Stockner, was a fiddle player, and he died as a youth. And my uncle and them had Uncle Penn's fiddle out there. And they still have it in their possession.
Do you think they'd allow us to photograph it for the documentary?
Yeah, I think he would.
How do I get in touch with him to ask?
Well, Judy Chin has got it now, which is my cousin, first cousin.
They live around here?
Live at Beaver Dam.
How did they get the fiddle?
Huh?
Do you know how they acquired it?
Yeah, my uncle bought it from William Pierce. And they got a signed statement from, Marn Pierce that it was Uncle Penn's fiddle, you know. I'm giving away my material now, you know. I intend to write a story on that.
Well, that'd make a wonderful story. You should do it.
I could still do it.
Oh, sure you can.
When you put it on television, I don't know if it's...
Well, I'm not. I'm just putting your words. I'm not going to take your words. If we use you, it'll be your words.
Okay.
It won't be what I said you said. It'll be what you say.
I'd try to write...
James Hines, it would give you good publicity.
Pardon?
It would give your writing a lot of good publicity.
Yeah. Yeah, it would, wouldn't it?
Sure it would.
You need that, you know.
Because people are real interested in this area.
Yeah.
And that your writing is based on things that have happened.
I've done enough writing about this area. I never got much credit. I used to in a county papers turn in my stores, and they'd write them up, you know. I got two or three things here I'll show you, but I can't leave this now, can I?
No. Well, yeah, we can unhook you. You want to stop a minute and go get
you
it?
You can take
it. I'll unhook you.
I just happened to run across
I'll unhook you here.
I just happened to run across these.
Okay.
Did you want to smoke a cigarette?
I don't smoke, thank you, but you can.
You don't smoke?
No.
My God, you were smoking the other day, weren't you?
No, not me. No.
Somebody was smoking me. Down there.
It wasn't me.
I don't smoke very often.
Oh. How old were you when you started playing?
Huh?
How old were you when you started playing?
Oh, about 15. I played all the time. I fell off a stepladder, broke my two fingers. Doctor ordered where they put them in a cast. Said I wouldn't do no work like paneling, shoving with a crowbar.
So that did that end and the musical
when
career?
He took them out of the cast, arthritis set up in the joint. I went to a specialist in Owensburg. He said I waited too late. But now you can operate on those joints and put in new joints. It's very painful.
Oh.
And I can't make the runs on the guitar like I should and everything.
So that pretty well ended your guitar career?
Yeah, it passed the time away. When you'd be writing, then you'd pick up your guitar. And
so that's how you got interested in writing words for these songs?
Yeah.
More or less.
I just go along and make up a song.
Do you think these old-time fiddlers helped you to get interested in writing the words?
Well, I think they influenced me, like William Pierce over there. See, I never did know Uncle Penn in person.
Well, tell me how William Pierce influenced you. Give me some examples, please.
Well, see, he lived in a log house, which his people walked in here from Maryland. In the 50s. He was born in 1874. In 1878, he moved a short way from where he lived in a house when he was 4 years old. When he was 12 years old, they built that double log house which he lived in until almost the time of his death. You knew where it was at, didn't you? And that was back of my grandfather's barn about a mile. Go by a path back in there, you know, didn't go around the road. I would say 3/4 mile. I'd take my guitar and go over there, you know, sometime 2 or 3 nights a week and play over there. He fiddle. Barn picked a guitar.
Well, now, did they make their songs up, too, with words, or were they mainly using only the instruments?
Yeah. No, they played the old fiddle tunes like Devil Dream and things, but I was creative. I'd make up a song. Maybe they made up songs too. I don't know, but I never did hear of it. But Bill Monroe does, you know, wrote
right. Well, so when you were over there with them, with them, your music.
Yeah.
And then tell me some more things that you did with William Pierce and how he influenced
you.
Tell
me what?
Tell me some more ways that William Pierce influenced you with your writing and your... I mean, after all, you've been writing gospel songs, and
well,
so
you know,
he must have had some influence on you.
I went to church, you know. They took me to church when I was a kid all the time, my parents. Of course, I heard those old gospel songs, you know.
Which church did you attend?
Pardon?
Which church did you attend?
Well, my parents attended Fairview. My mother was... See, I lived a mile out this road, a mile beyond is Fairview. In a church, used to be a country school. There's no longer a one-room school, but it's a church. That's where I went to church, mostly at Fairview, because my mother grew up in that district out there. I was very fortunate to have my grandparents. One of them lived a few hundred yards from me. One of them lived about 3/4 mile away. My grandparents, you know, they all lived until I was in my 30s.
What kind of music did you have at your church?
They had organ. Sometimes they had, Baptist didn't, but a lot of churches I attended would have guitars, mandolins and stuff. Pentecostal. And my uncles played music, played a mandolin and a guitar and a fiddle. and a bass. They played music, and they went to get on audition on radio two or three times, and they took Melvin Kaysinger. Melvin Kaysinger knocked them out, what they always did.
What does that mean?
Caused them not to get the job. They went off an audition about time Charlie Monroe did, you know. But Charlie Monroe left here and went up around Hammond, Indiana. That's where he sang his first song, in Gary, Indiana. And then they got a playing around in WLS Chicago with Barn Dance. You know, it was a big WLW Barn Dance in Chicago.
Yes.
And Charlie and Birch and Bill got a job as dancers, square dancers there. They practiced their music. They was playing around in their spare time, and they went off down in Carolina, and they start playing over the radio and everything at courthouses. And they were a phenomenon, you know. They released some records. And what would you give in exchange for your soul? Charlie and Bill Monroe. They stuck with it. And there was a lot of other, the Callahan brothers, and Vernon Delhart, and Pasty Montana. And they stuck with it. Blue Sky Boys, you know. Then Charlie and Bill split up. Birch, sometimes he played with Charlie and sometimes with Bill. I mean, Charlie and Bill split up, and Bill come back to Rosine. That's when the first time I ever saw him. He was walking down the street. I told you about that, didn't I?
I think you did.
I was a kid in grade school. He came walking down the street, and he told me that was when him and Charlie split up. He came walking down the street, and the kid said, that's Bill Monroe. And he had his hair long and curly, and he had on a cowboy hat and buckskin or something, fringe, like an Indian scout or something. He'd been in Nebraska someplace playing music there, Omaha. And Leif Monroe was a teacher. He was a cousin of Bill Monroe, just died not very long ago. The old Jack Monroe house burned down here just about a year ago, wasn't it, Henry? It was a historic landmark. Bill said he hadn't heard about it burning down. Told me up in Bean Blossom.
Hmm. Well, then, about this time, why did Melvin Kaysinger knock them out of an opportunity?
Well,
let's go back to that.
They announced what we're going to play, and Melvin said, no, we're playing Red Wing. Things like that, that's what they said.
So they felt like if they hadn't had him with them,
yeah,
they would have
thought
made
he
it.
Messed up. They was good, probably just as good as Charlie and Bill. There was a lot of groups around here was good at them, but Charlie and Bill had more guts. Birch, they had more guts, and they stuck with it, you know. They didn't go out and play a while and then quit. Uncle died, and then my other uncle never did play no more. He was a fiddle player in a bunch.
Now, this group with Melvin and your uncle, now give me their names that made that group up. There was Melvin Kaysinger.
Well, it was Oda Stogner and Vernon Stogner, and I don't know who else. But Monkey Taylor said they auditioned at WSM. I don't think they auditioned at Grand Ole Opry. I thought they auditioned in Evansville, Indiana. Might have been for WSM.
And that's where they felt like Melvin messed him up, in Evansville.
Yeah.
Or wherever.
And some
they
of them
were.
Said he wasn't a good fiddle player, and others said he was a fiddle player, and so I don't...
Well, since you've been all over this county, was music this important all over this county, or was it more centralized right in here?
Well, I don't know. They played music all over this county, but they had a lot of it going here in Rosine around, you know. So many people played guitars, you know. Of course, they made their own music, you know. Wasn't any music much, and radio was far and few between, you know. And half time, you couldn't get something on one of them, you know.
Where did they get their instruments? Did some of them make their instruments? Or
well,
did
yeah, I've seen fiddles and banjos and everything made, homemade ones, but some of them bought them. They didn't, you know, they didn't cost a great deal. I mean, you could buy an instrument for it. And then they'd trade around these fiddles and things.
They did.
I could have, bought Uncle Penn's fiddle for $150 and had bought it. And sent my Aunt Veda the check for it. Then that was 1971. I live in Louisville, and they put on a Loretta Lynn for those coal miners was killed in Kentucky. Was a whole bunch of them put on a benefit program, and Bill Monroe was on that benefit program, and I went down to that auditorium where they're playing. It was televised, you know, and so I went backstage and talked with Bill, and then he got up. Each one of them sang two songs. Roy Acuff sang two songs. All these entertainers from Nashville there and all over. And Bill Monroe got up and dedicated me a song. So my aunt, she wrote void on the check, void, 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 and sent it back to me. She thought me and Bill was in cahoots. You know, Bill Monroe, if he would do it, but he won't do it. He could cause that fiddle to bring a lot of money, up in the thousands. If he get up and say that was Uncle Penn's fiddle and it was for sale.
That's true.
But you could never get him to do that.
Well, I hope they'll let us take a picture of it.
I think they will. My cousin got it now, I've been told. I don't know. She's not a musician. Why she's got it? I don't know if she's at home now or not. I could call and see.
Well, after a while, we'll call and see. Or if we don't get to it today, we'll work on it another day. I can tell I'm going to need to interview you some more.
They got the paper signed by Marvin Pierce. Of course, I knew it was Uncle Penn the fiddle all my life, you know.
How did you know?
Huh?
Why do you know it was Uncle Penn?
Well, I heard William Pierce talk about it, you know. Mm. And then I know he sold it to my uncle. My uncle died, and I knew it was at my grandfather's house all the time. Uncle Penn fiddle.
Did Uncle Penn's bow seem long to you?
Huh?
Was the bow to his fiddle extra long?
It looked in that picture, but I didn't.
I thought it looked long in the picture, but
the place out there belongs to my mother. Uncle Penn owned that place.
He did?
Uncle Penn owned that place. And he sold it to Big John Autry. And Big John Autry died, and John Dewey Autry got it. And my dad bought it from John D. Autry. That's Tom Autry's dad up here, Rosine. And that's where he lived, and Willie Johnson, that down in that holler with that spring, you know. He hauled off slept Cecil. I told you about that. You know, spitting in his water jug.
I don't remember that. Tell me again.
I told you down the restaurant, Chicken.
Well, I don't remember it all. Tell it to me, if you don't mind.
Well, see, I had a house out there in the valley and up on top of a hill, and you come up top of a hill and walk several hundred feet. Then there's a line fence. I'm over on my mother. Willie Johnson, he came down my house, and we walking back up through there, and we was in that field. And that was where Uncle Penn lived, close to the woods there. Used to be when I was a boy, we took him foundation stones up so you could till the ground. And where he lived, there was a slope and was a holler there, and there was a spring. Then you go up that other slope in a big flat field, and Willie Johnson was plowing corn over there. I don't know how old he was. He had a jug. He went down that spring to get a jug of water. And that Cecil, Uncle Penn's boy, he's on the tombstone out here. He spit tobacco juice in Willie's water jug. And Uncle Penn hollered down there. That's what Willie told me on the scene over there. We was walking up through. It was just sort of a little joke, remembering something. That was Willie's old home place across that holler in that big flat field where he was raised. He was planting corn. And Uncle Penn, Cecil started squalling, and Willie hauled off, slapped him. And Uncle Penn hollered down there, "What's wrong?" And that's what I told you. Willie said, "Cecil just spit tobacco juice in my water jug. I slapped a P-I-S-S out of him." Willie told me that. We walking along that day, you know.
Do you know what happened to Uncle Penn's daughter?
daughter. No, I don't. I don't know who.
Nobody seems to know what happened to her. If she died early, or if she moved out of here.
See, Lake Monroe died here not very long ago. He probably could have been a lot of help. I don't know what happened to her. Maybe she died. I don't know. Bill might have been able to tell you. I tell you, who could have really told you was Charlie Monroe's wife, Betty. She had the history of that. The Monroe family and everything, you know.
Did they have children that would help me out?
No, Charlie and Betty had no children. Both Charlie and Betty are both dead. The Monroe three brothers owned 2,500 acres of land here, from Roseanne to Horton. And then there was some more. I think it was Andrew. Jack Monroe and Buck Monroe. That's Bill's father. There was a William Monroe named after Bill. And Bert Monroe and Andrew Monroe. There was five brothers, but three brothers owned 2,500 acres of land from here to Horton. And Charlie intended to buy all that back. When he come back here, he got 1,000 acres, but Wavy Hines had part of it, and he couldn't get it. That's what Charlie told me. The land is straight up and down, just hills and hollers, you know. That guy was wanting to lease that for coal. He went back in there on Jerusalem Bridge. He said, I've been every place in Kentucky, all over eastern Kentucky, and I never seen any place like over in there, you know, up and down them hills and hollers. That's what he told me. They dug some coal. They mostly worked in timber. It was covered with big timber. The early Monroes worked in timber. It wasn't such good farming country back over there, but it was good timber country, you know.
Did they have their own lumber yard back in there?
Had a lumber yard.
Did the Monroes have a lumber yard?
Well, they had sawmills back in there. And they brought it here, Roseanne. It was a big lumber yard, tie yard, and they cut telephone poles. All these, I don't know, 30, 40 feet. They cut them where you could stand up. A 6-foot man could stand up, and the tree was a lot higher down at the butt. They got pictures of them over there, so people have.
They do. Well, that would be
interesting. Yeah, they cut trees 8 foot through, I guess.
Goodness.
My grandfather did that too, and they just float them to Evansville, wrapped them together by pins.
Where did they float them from?
Well, sometime they started them on Caney in Muddy Creek. Started them on Caney and go on into Rough Creek and then go on into Green River in Ohio. My grandfather Hines, he went down river a lot of times to Evansville. He said, you just lay on your raft, put your hand out and touch the water, you know. He used to tell me how they pinned them together with pins. They had to keep those creeks clean, didn't they?
Yes.
At that time, he was clean out. What was that?
That's her watch, and it's picking it up on the tape. I was telling her not to keep doing that.
You interested in that lower like that?
Yeah. Well, let's get back to these old-time musicians now. We talked about Pierce. I'm getting all these mixed. I have to look at my list. The man, Cletus Smith, who was blind.
Cletus Smith?
Mm-hmm.
He was partly blind.
What made him blind?
I don't know. But I don't know much about him. All I know that I saw him at a homecoming. He was picking a guitar, playing Rabbit in a Pea Patch when I was a little kid. Story Gary said he knew him well. James Leach said he did too. James Leach said them guys couldn't play. James Leach used to play, and his uncle was Texas Action. The whole bunch played. And he said Melvin K. Sanger, and that they couldn't play. He never did say Uncle Penn couldn't play, but he said Melvin K. Sanger wasn't a good fiddler. He didn't have the timing. But then Bill Monroe told me Uncle Penn taught him. That's one thing he did. He taught him timing.
So that was his main contribution.
Yeah, when
then.
You play by yourself all the time, you don't have timing, you know.
You have to be with other people to pick
group,
it up.
Yeah, you lose your sense of timing. That's what different people have told me all the time. I talked with the Osborne brother. I talked with Bobby Osborne, good while up Bean Blossom. He's so tired and worn out, you know.
Really?
I showed you his schedule, didn't I?
Yes.
He's tired. Very tired he was.
What direction do you see bluegrass music going since you've been around here from the beginnings of it all? Have you seen it change much? Do you think it's going to change a lot more or go back to traditional?
Yeah, you see the other bluegrass band change it. Bill Monroe has kept mostly the original form, you know. He keeps the same sound. Most of Bill's. If Bill Monroe had called it greengrass, it'd been called greengrass.
Do you consider Bill Monroe the father of bluegrass?
Do I consider? Well, he's the one promoted. It hadn't been for him, you know. He stuck with it. People said, let's play like Bill Monroe and the bluegrass boys. And they finally shortened it and just let's play bluegrass, you know. Charlie Monroe never could figure that out. He said, reason to imitate Bill Monroe. Bill Monroe is one of the most imitated entertainers in the business. And his music is precise. But Charlie Monroe never could figure that out. He said Bill Monroe was one of the easiest entertainers. There was a copy. But I don't agree, you know.
Oh, you think Bill would be hard to copy?
Yeah, he's hard to copy because bluegrass men are masterly musicians. Like Jimmy Martin said, he's a top bluegrass. He said if a country band loses a musician, they can replace him in 2 or 3 days. But if you lose a bluegrass musician, it takes you a year to replace, you know. You got to have reflexes, quick reflexes to play bluegrass music. You know, you see how those...
Oh, yes.
Your reflexes.
That's true. You have to be fast.
Fast. Some of them say it's folk music and overdrive, you know. Before Bill got a hold of it, it was slow. He paced her up. When he opened on the opera, he opened with that Mule Skinner Blues, you know. Jimmy Rogers wrote the old number and sung it real slow, and Bill speeded it up, you know. I heard a guy one time, Rex Griffin, I think it was, he wrote that little red wagon or something. He said Monroe Brothers had ruined many a tune.
By speeding it up?
I guess, changing it around, but it would change for the better.
Mm.
But Bill and Charlie was always my friend ever since I was a little boy. Bill and I have been friends since 1952.
How did you meet him then?
See, I was around with Charlie, and then I went off up there studying journalism, and I wrote stories about Charlie. For Sunday Section, Roto Grave Sections, Courier Journal, and Evansville Courier Press, and I wrote stories, and I was down Charlie's when Bill came down there. That's how I met him. Then I kept up an acquaintance, and then Bill would come to see me, and for years we was closely associated, but I haven't been around him. I haven't been around him much in the last few years, you know. I used to be with him a lot.
Have you used him in some of your stories?
What?
Have you used him as some of your story material?
No, not really, except I wrote articles about the Monroe brothers, you know.
Not fiction articles. You're
no,
just writing sketches or something. Well, I think let's stop for today, and that'll give me some time.
Well, I hope I may have told you something.
Oh, you told me a lot of good things. What I need to do now is think about it and see where I want to go next with it. But we need to work some more at some point in the next week or so. Will you be around this week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Most of the time, I'm here all the time.
Okay, well.
I'm in the back a lot of times, in the back, see?
All right. Oh, yes, and you mow your grass at midnight.
Wow, you hear me out mowing?
I was over there Friday night, and I heard this big zoom.
Well, I didn't think.
You made a fast turn in that thing. I said, oh, he's going to go over in the bush.
I got home, and I started worn out, and I needed that yard mowed, and So I didn't feel like doing nothing, and I get out and mow the yard. Was I going fast?
Yes, it looked like, put it this way, over there it looked like you were going pretty fast, especially when you'd make a turn.
I wonder I hadn't run into something and killed myself.
It's a wonder you didn't run into one of your bushes, your famous bushes.
I didn't know you were over there. I didn't know. I went over there once, wasn't very many people praying.
Well, they started, really started about dark.
I didn't think it was but two or three people playing.
Oh, there was a bunch over there. This is the end of this interview.
Well, I was working. When they're filming, I've got to cater to what they need, like I was over there that night, too.
I'll sit down.
I'm sorry, it falls off easy.
Let's
see, what were we talking about? Well, let's talk about this Marlon Pierce a little while.
Or Nancy Thomas?
Yeah, either one of them. Your choice. Which one you want to start with?
I'd like to hear her. You know, I guess she had more than one child. I don't know. Dean lived out on the Vine Hill Road. But she had a son. He was overturned. He was burned up. They were giving a party and a dance that night, I think. They just went ahead and gave it.
Did you ever know her?
Did I know her?
Yes.
Yeah, I knew her real well.
You did? What did she look like? Give me a sketch of her if you were going to just tell me about her.
Bert and active. She's in a kettle down here for the... at Hartford, the county fair, and they give the old blue man, she called him, he was blue. One, it said the only reason he won that fiddling contest was that old, he was blue, they felt sorry for him.
What made him blue?
I don't know, was something wrong somewhere with his blood or something, I don't know, he was blue.
Did you see him?
I had seen him.
Was he a dark blue or a light blue?
Light blue. Say the devil's dead and buried in a basin, but I know it ain't so. I saw him the other day, they're kicking up hell in Jason.
And she was singing that?
Yeah. Fiddle tunes, I guess. But she went around, you know, she played all over this country when her boy took a guitar. Married her dead husband's brother, all of them died, and they said she shied the horse all the way around. She married Bill Pierce. He run a store in Rosine. His wife died. He run a store. Now, he could have told you some stories. He run a store here for 30 years. Then he sold out to Ferguson. His store burned down all up in here where the post office is. It was a big river dam. And... she lived, be about 90 years old, and she died and moved in a mobile home to Owensboro, and Leonard Thomas, Allie Pierce, his granddaughter's yard, that's where he lived. I think he was 92 when he...
You said she was about 5 what? 5? 5. What color hair did she have when you remember?
Well, she had gray like hair, what I
by
did.
By that time, she was older?
Yeah, she was old.
Did she wear it short, long?
No,
braided?
She left her now. She was frisky type.
Spunky?
Yeah, spunky. She was back all her life, you know, and Bill Pierce, he become a Catholic. And that priest teased her about chewing that tobacco, and she quit after all those years. And Bill Pierce had his own coffin made. He made his own coffin. He was a good craftsman. Had a yellow popper, made her one. She wasn't going to be buried in that coffin.
I don't say that I blame her, do you?
No. It was, you know how the old time coffin was, it smaller here, then it come out, then it curved in. You've seen them, haven't you?
Yes.
Have you ever been up to Falls Rough, that old green mansion?
Yes.
You've been there?
Mm-hmm.
They got a coffin setting up for a kid's coffin in that store. They used to sell them. And you've been there. That's...
Yeah, it's been a while. I haven't been there in about 10 years. It's been a while.
They got that store open.
The last time I was there, the woman that owned it, who'd married the doctor from Owensboro, the Baird woman.
Yeah.
She was pregnant, and ghosts and ponies were running through the through the store, and she was chasing them out with the broom. That's all I remember. Well, let's get back to this woman now. This Miss Pierce, was she heavy set or slender?
And what?
Was Miss Pierce a heavy set, the fiddler?
No, she was not. Medium.
Was she
neither
light
heavy
on...
nor slender.
Okay. Was she light on her feet, you think?
Yes.
The dancer? Play with.
Well, some of her children played music, and she played with anybody that wanted to play, you know. Some of her children, he carried his fiddle wherever he went.
He did?
Yeah.
That's another person I wanted to talk about.
He always wore a suit.
What kind of suit?
Well, you had just have a suit on, you know, a business.
Well, was it usually dark or white or?
Well, it'd be different colors. His wife was a teacher. I don't think he ever did anything but fiddle, though. Wherever he went, he had that fiddle. You see him going on packing his fiddle. Suit on. He's a slender man. Do you remember him, Henry?
Oh, was he short, tall?
Tall.
Tall.
I would say.
Tall, slender.
He looked tall to me as a kid. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Played the fiddle.
Yeah, he played.
Nothing else, just the fiddle.
Born out 1 mile north of here. We killed him, he came by. So he sat down and played some. He's fiddling. Finally, we had to go off and raise him as a kid, you know. My grandfather and father was farming that field. My brother and I was down there helping, fiddle, sat down under a shade tree, you know. He come by walking, carrying his fiddle. He liked to fiddle red wing.
Hmm. When he do that, did he just sit down and play? He just, wherever he was?
Did he do what?
He just sat down and played when he got in the notion?
He just sat down, anybody wanted to listen, he'd play.
Y'all had to keep working and he kept playing, I guess.
Yeah. After so long, you know. They loved to play that fiddle, you know. That's the way Uncle Penn was, I guess.
So in your mind, if Bill Monroe hadn't made Uncle Penn famous, he would have been remembered, really.
I don't think he would have. He wrote that fiddle pin about him. Some people call him Uncle Penn. His name was Pemberton, I guess. P-E-M-B-E-R-K-O-N. Charlie Monroe, that's Bill's brother, bluegrass singer. Did you see that in the paper of Charlie and Bill?
Yes.
It said 1925. I would say that was 1935.
Well, you should tell them.
Well, 25. Bill was born 1911, so 25, you know. But that's as they started playing and come back here. The Monroe brother, you know.
Yes.
Uncle Penn owned that place out there where we own, where I was born at.
Now, is that the one when you go out here to Branchers and you turn...
Go out
here.
Out by the Path Rose and Graveyard.
I think, Francis took me out there the other day.
Who?
Francis.
Took you out
to that farm that yeah. Uncle Penn, where he used to live?
Yeah.
So that's in your family, right?
That's my mother's place.
Your mother's place. But now, did Uncle Penn own that property?
He owned it, not counting 10 acres, he owned a farm that I grew up on. Not counting 10 acres. Uncle Penn sold it to Big John Autry. Big John Autry sold it to John D. Autry, Tom Autry's father. And Tom Autry's father sold it to my father. And where the old house stood was piled. I had a huge pillar rock. Tom said him and his brother piled them up. I remember hauling them off in a wagon. He said some of them had rotted. Did you and Francis go all the way over there?
We just stayed on that road. She said
she pointed out across that field.
Yeah, she said, I hope we don't get in trouble. She said, surely we won't. But we drove down there.
You didn't drive out in the field, did you?
No, there was a place to turn around.
Did you go on?
We didn't go in a field. We just stayed on that road and then we turned around.
You stayed on the highway.
No, we got off the highway onto a gravel road. We turned
left. You went on down in the...
We went down.
Yeah.
And there were some trees over there, and she said from what she was told, she thought that's about where the house used to be.
Uh-oh.
But she didn't know.
she couldn't even see it. You couldn't even see it down there. It's on the mother place. If you go straight out the mother place, my brother-in-law owns my granddad's place, you'd look across the field. On 1544, that's where it was. It was on.
Can you see it from the road?
Yeah, you could see it from the road.
We might drive out there after a while and see if we can see it.
Yeah.
To look at it.
Yeah,
I've
been cutting hay on my mother's place. Are you hot?
No, it takes a lot for me to be hot. Are you getting enough air? I'm getting so much air.
Yeah, because this house is not air conditioned. And like I go someplace, you know, and if your house got central air, you know, I was going to put central air in this place that never did. Blew up between the light booths.
Right.
Now, if you used to central air and air conditioning, it will seem hot, but I'm not used to it, so it don't seem hot to me.
Right, well, it takes a lot for me to sweat, so I'm fine. Yeah. Now, when Uncle Ken lived out there, was he married at that time, or was that after they
Yeah, he was married.
His son was still alive at that time?
Yeah, that's where I told you, Willie Johnson, Francis' father, slapping that boy, Cecil. You know, I told you about it was risque.
Yeah. Right, I remember that.
Yeah. Frances drove me down to her old granddaddy's place. You turned on top of a hill and cut that gravel road down, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't see from there. No way, you know. Did y'all walk any?
No, we just went down that little road and turned around.
It wasn't never on. B.C. Taylor owned that place there, and I used to own 40 acres of it myself, a big flat field. Walk a long way.
So, did Uncle Ken build that house, or was it already there when he got there?
No. I would say it was already there.
What kind of house was it?
I guess it was just, I don't know. It could have been a log house, it could have been a frame house, I don't know. I'm sure that it was, the house was there.
Riding on those stones when you moved?
No, Tom Orchard said him and James piled them up. And so it was riding. He said, I ought to look, and I told him, I remember my father and them, we put them in a road wagon, I think, and haul them off there over in the woods now. That was when I was a kid, you know.
Then where did Uncle Ken go after? Did he sell that farm?
He sold that farm.
To?
Big John Orchard.
Okay, now, where did he go after he sold the farm? Was it that when he and his wife separated, you think?
I don't know. He moved to Butler County, you know.
He did?
He went to Butler County and stayed. I don't know that much about it. He moved all the time around. He liked to stay down at First Wilson.
Well, of course, he wasn't with his wife then. That was after his son was dead, from what Miss Hines told me.
After his son was dead.
Mm-hmm. And she said if they mentioned anything about his son, it would make him cry, so they, after, you know, a few times, they decided not to ask him anything.
Well, what about his daughter?
We can't find a thing about his daughter. And the only way I knew he had a daughter was from, Miss Bertha told me that.
Yeah.
So we don't know. Do you know anything about her?
No.
I have it written down, but I don't have it with me. I wonder if she was older than the son or younger.
I don't know.
Oh, where his wife is buried?
No. All I know, they died the same day, they said.
I heard that. Stoy told me that. Is that true?
Stoy told you. Yeah, I got it in a newspaper file or something.
Do you?
Yeah, they died on the same day.
Interesting to know what day. Maybe we could find out where she's buried, if you could find that article.
Take this tape off. I might look under Bill Monroe file. It might be in there.
Okay.
I remember.
You see, I had to get this grant, I had to have 4 letters of recommendation.
Yeah.
And I thought I needed somebody local,
some
politician or person in government to be my sponsors.
Yeah.
So I asked who that would be, and a person told me. I had Dudley Cooper wrote me a letter, and so did Frank. And then I got 2 from Owensboro.
Frank wrote you a letter?
Uh-huh. A real nice letter, too, about the needs for this to be done, the oral history of the area.
Well, Frank Martin is a good friend of mine.
Is he? He's a nice man. He's helped me a lot.
He's interested in bluegrass, isn't he?
I don't know, because every time I'm in there, he's so busy. And oh yes, he's interested, but I don't know, you know, how much or anything. What do you know about Cleve Bays as an old-time musician?
All I know that he liked to play breakdowns, and he liked to drink.
What did he drink?
Liquor, and he sold liquor.
Moonshine
sold it. What Noble told me, you know.
He made it and sold it?
Yeah, then sold bootleg legal, buy it and sell it. Noble said that sickened him out. He never would drink, you know. They get drunk and they fiddle with the bow on the strings and...
Did he play at the dances too?
Yeah, he played that. You know, Bill Monroe mentions him in his book about walking, going back over to hell. You know, you said you got that book. Did you get it?
I haven't gotten it through the library yet. I ordered it, but they haven't gotten it.
He mentioned Cleve Bays. That's where Story got Cleve Bays. He's reading my book. I mentioned the story about that, whatever you said, the story told you that, about him dying the same day.
Yeah.
I told Story that. About everything Story knows about bluegrass, I told him.
Well, you did a good job then.
Yeah. He's interested in it now, you know.
Do you know anything about a Cletus Smith that was a musician?
Yeah, I don't know much about him, but I said, when I was a kid, it was had a homecoming at Salem, and Cletus Smith, he was partly blind, you know, was picking the guitar. He sang in Rabbit in the Pea Patch.
Rabbit in the Pea Patch.
Yeah, I remember.
That.
He'd make up verses, you know, make up as he went along.
Mm-hmm. So he played the guitar?
Yeah, he played the guitar.
Did you ever hear Johnny Ferris play?
Johnny who?
Ferris.
No, I never heard Johnny Ferris. Was he a
fiddler?
Was he a fiddler?
Banjo and French harp. I interviewed him.
That Arnold Schultz used to live down there, one influenced Monroe, you know.
Yes. He spent a lot of time with Flossie Hines' family.
Who did?
Schultz.
With Duncan Hines' family?
No, with Flossie. Flossie's people.
Oh, Flossie's
with
people.
Clarence Wilson. Uh-huh.
Working for them?
No, they spent a lot of time playing music together.
Oh, they did?
Mm-hmm. A lot of time.
Clarence Wilson spent a lot of time playing music with him.
Yes.
He was a Negro.
Right.
According to Bill Monroe, he was really good.
Yes, everybody said he was good.
They
I
did.
I was in an interview that Keith Lawrence did with his cousin shortly before she died. And she was talking about what a good fiddle player he was.
Yeah.
Well, she was older. She was in a rest home, probably. That's
Atlantic Monthly had a big story about bluegrass.
Did it?
Newsweek had a story.
Mm-hmm.
I've got them here, all over.
What about this dance hall down here at Twin... What's it called? Twin...
Twin Hills.
Twin Hills. What do you know about that?
I don't know anything about it. Just it was a dance hall and pretty wild at times.
About what years were those?
Do
you know?
About what years?
Uh-huh.
Way back before, I guess, probably before 40.
Well, Miss Ellen, that interview referred to it several times, the people playing there.
Did they ever tell you about too many people being killed by trains here in this town?
No, what happened?
Well, a lot of them were killed, or killed and put on the railroad track or something.
To make it look like the train?
Yeah. Archie Orchard was killed over there, and they claim he was killed over here in the schoolhouse yard.
Why do you think there's been so much violence here?
I don't know. It was on the railroad, you know. Any town was on the railroad with a tribe and community. That was railroad days before trucks took it over. From the river, used to have all the business. The towns on the river. And then when the railroad came through, the towns, it was a big lumbering center here, ties. Raymond Phelps, he was found on the railroad over there. Lee Phillips up the road, and then Billy Hatler and Willard Peach was found, both of them.
But you don't know why they were killed?
Well, I hear a lot of things, and but you're taping me about it, and so.
Well, do you want me to turn the tape off so you'll tell me? Don't leave me in suspense.
Pardon?
You want me to turn the tape off?
Yeah. What do you want to know?
Young musician.
Yeah, he was a young musician.
What did he play?
A guitar. Him and James Leach used to play together all the time. James Leach played a mandolin, and he played a guitar. Now, James Leach's uncle was Shelby Edson. They ever told you about him, fiddle player?
No, but I've got an interview. I'm going to interview him next week.
Who?
Mr. Leach.
Which one? James?
James.
Noble, he just died. He could have told you more. He was a fiddle player.
Noble, what was his last name? Leach?
Leach. All them Leaches, those Edsons were their uncles. They all played that Shelby. Tex Edson, he went off to Hollywood and lived in Hollywood. He used to play over WLW in Chicago Barn Dance. He married one of the girls of Golden West, Dolly and Millie. They were the famous duet girl singers, you know. Sisters, I guess. He married one of them. He went off to Hollywood and he played with Gene Autry and Johnny. He played in bit parts in movies, and he played with fiddle for Gene Autry bunch and Johnny Bond and different ones, you know. Merle Travis, you've heard of him, haven't you?
Yes.
I seen that book on Merle Travis, and there's a picture of Tex and Gene Autry together. Tex Ashton, for that Merle Travis homecoming, it was in that book. He said, so Tex Ashton just died here a few years ago.
Yes.
He probably was the best known other than Bill Monroe to come out here. He was the best known. He was a left-handed fiddle player.
Left-handed?
Left-handed. And he played that wagon train all the time, and he played in bands. He was, anybody needed a fiddle player for a recorded, you know.
When did you first meet the Monroes?
When I first met them.
Do you remember when you first met them?
Well, see, I had known them all my life, but I become good friends with Charlie Monroe. I was going to University of Kentucky. I was 20 years old. And I went down there and I wrote a story on him. I interviewed him and wrote a story on him.
So that was your first, really?
Yeah. And so Betty said, if you can get a story out of that, you're a real journalist. So I sold a story to the Sunday section of the Courier Journal. And they was at a theater, playing a theater in Hazard when it come out. And when they come home on Christmas, and I just come home from University of Kentucky, they gave me a dinner. So I went down there and they picked and sung a lot. And I was down there in 1950. When I really knew Bill Monroe, that was about 1953, I was down there and Bill came up.
So you knew Charlie first?
Pardon?
You knew Charlie
Yeah,
first.
I knew Charlie first. And him and Betty, his wife, used to come out the house to eat Sunday dinner, then we'd be down there. He had 1,000 acres of land, you know. They said the Monroes wouldn't work Uncle Penn.
Why is that?
Well, they didn't like it. And Jack Monroe would say to Charlie and Bill Burch, you're just like that Uncle Penn. You're not worth the salt goes in your bread or something like that. You're just like that old Uncle Penn. They'd be on standing around here fiddling and playing music. Burch fiddling and...
So Charlie Monroe's weren't interested in music at all?
No. What?
Hard work.
They wasn't, well, Uncle Penn wasn't too hot on work, you know. All them Monroes worked in timber and playing music or something all the time. That wasn't a very good vocation or profession, whatever you call it. That's what Uncle Penn does, and played fiddle all the time, went around and traded.
So then after you did your article and they had the dinner, then did you keep in touch with Charlie as his career was...
Yeah, I kept in touch with Charlie all those years, you know.
Now, were you in touch with him when Noble went on the road with Charlie?
No, Noble was on the road before then with Charlie, 2 years. But Noble, the Lord called him to be a preacher, and after he left.
Right.
Then after I became acquainted with Bill, Bill and I was together a lot, all these years.
And how did you meet Bill?
I met him, the first time I was a pallbearer when Harry Monroe died, and I shook hands with him out here at Rosedale Graveyard, but I met him down in Charlie's. And then we become friends, and when he come up in here, a lot of times he come out house see me. And then we become friends. I go down Nashville and visit him.
Have you written about him over the years?
Yeah, I wrote some stories about him. I wrote that in that record company, you know, they used it. I told you about that. I wrote the story of Charlie Bill, and then it appeared in the Evansville Sunday Courier Press.
Get a copy of that. You know when it was?
62, 63. I've got a copy here, but I don't know where.
Well, if we knew.
Yeah,
today,
I have.
I can look it up on microfiche.
Huh?
I can look it up on microfiche if I know the approximate time and date. When you were writing about him, were you writing just personal interest stories about them, or what?
Human interest stories, I guess.
Have you ever used them in some of your fiction?
Well, in some ways, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's what I kind of figured.
You know, I think that story, I think I could show you that story.
Oh, okay.
I believe I can, but I'm not sure. I think
it's laying up there. Or there up there. I got boxes galore.
How's it you do?
I've been looking for that.